musai ogwaika natu.
The African Children's Choir is visiting Illinois, and they stop by our studio in Urbana to perform several songs and talk about their mission.
When the children travel, we raise funding and sponsorships for these children, so we are able to take them back home with hope that they will go to school and not be able to pay for school.
And finally, we check in with our 21st partner station that's been with us from the very beginning, WUIS in Springfield. That's all coming up this hour on the 21st. Stay tuned. Welcome to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. The African Children's Choir has performed at Royal Albert Hall, in the Pentagon, and at the United Nations in thousands of concerts in its 27-year history. The choir is comprised of 7 to 10-year-olds from 7 African nations: Uganda, Rwanda, Kenya, South Sudan, South Africa, Nigeria, and Ghana. This choir is the 47th such singing group of the organization. In the past few weeks, a group of 19 children, aged 7 to 10 years old, from Uganda have been touring throughout central Illinois. They're performing tonight at Trinity Lutheran Church in Urbana, but they're in studio with us now. Hi, everyone.
Hi, Auntie Nyla.
Amazing Grace.
Amazing Grace, how sweet the sound. That's a direct like you and me. I was so close, but now I'm found. Was blind, but now I see.
Amazing Grace,
Amazing Grace, how sweet the sound. That set the rest like you and me.
I was so close,
but now I'm found. Was blind, but now I see.
Amazing Grace,
Amazing Grace.
So much for those performances. In studio with me now, I'd like to introduce 4 people who are part of the choir. All of the other kids who are not being interviewed are actually across the glass watching us. But with us from the choir, Ronnie, who is 9 years old, and Marklene, who is 8 years old. Hi, Ronnie. Hi, Marklene. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Auntie.
Thank you. And I also want introduce you guys have very good manners. I appreciate that. I also want to introduce David Kalech, who's a chaperone and a teacher with the choir. He was in the choir himself, the 15th choir in 1997. Hi, David. Thank you for being here with me.
Thank you for having me.
And so the choir's music director is with us as well, Lynette Nabatanzi. She was in the 21st version of the choir in 2003. Hi, Lynette.
Hi, Nyla.
Lynette, can you explain the African Children's Choir for everyone who's not familiar, how, when you guys were founded, what the purpose of the choir is?
Yes. The African Children's Choir was founded 34 years ago when Ray Barnett, our founder, was a missionary in Uganda, and he went to Uganda to help out with the churches. He found there had been a war, and there were so many children who were orphaned because of the civil war that had just broken out, and he loved the children. He fell in love with the children after he gave a ride to a small boy from the village to the city who had lost his parents. He had no hope, but he sang on the way from the village to the city, and it was a long journey. And he thought to himself that if he brought a choir to the States and to the West and showed the people the other side of Africa that nobody sees. He thought that what if everyone could see the hope and life that these children have for the future of their country. So he brought out the first African children's choir in 1984. And from then on, the choir has continued to bring out choirs and help so many children back home.
And so the point of the choir, you do tours. Is it every year that you all are on tour?
Yes.
Yes, every year.
Every year. David, how old were you when you joined the choir?
I was 9 years old.
You were 9 years old. And you're from Kenya?
Yes, I'm from Kenya.
And what was the experience like for you when you first started joining, when you first joined the choir?
It was exciting and it was a new experience because I got a lot of opportunities. Because when I joined the choir, I got to travel around the world. So my choir toured in the United States of America, England, Scotland, and Northern Ireland. And these are places that I'd never even dreamt of going to. So it was a new experience. And also, coming to the United States, I experienced a very different culture because everything looked clean. The roads were so organized. I mean, the vehicles, everything was okay. So it was a new experience.
And how did you end up working with the choir now as an adult?
I volunteered to work with the choir. That was in 2015. Yes. So I was working somewhere else, and then I thought, this choir, this organization has supported me through my education. They had an impact on me. So I also want to impact somebody else's life. So I decided to just work with the choir. So up to now, here I am.
Lynette, how does the choir help support the children who are in the choir, their education?
First, the choir has educated over 52,000 children in those 7 African countries. But the choir, so when the children travel, we raise funding and sponsorships for these children. So from the people we meet, we get different donors, different people that are willing to give to these children's education. So we are able to take them back home with hope that they will go to school and not be able to pay for school, because we pay for school back home in Africa.
Right, all, there's no such thing as public education.
No, mm-hmm. All the way from preschool, all the way up to university. So we get them sponsors, we advocate for sponsors, and when they get sponsored, they study for free, and this keeps, it's a gift that keeps giving. The more choirs we bring out, the more children they represent, because they don't speak for only themselves. They raise sponsorship for other children that are back home. So through this process, we've been able to get funding, and we support them mentally. We disciple them into the likeness of God, and we give them a future.
How old were you when you joined the choir, Lynette?
I was 8.
You were 8?
Yes. Yeah.
And what was it like for you the first time you sang in the choir? Do you remember?
I remember it was a lot of fun. We played games we had never played before.
Like what?
Tag.
Okay.
Playing with Barbie dolls. Back home, we make Barbie dolls out of banana leaves. You wrap the leaves up and then you make yourself a Barbie mm-hmm. doll. Children had like over thousands. We saw snow. That does not happen in Uganda. The coldest, the average it can be is like 50 degrees. So that was something.
So the first time you saw snow. I remember the first time I saw snow. I was 18 and I was in college and it was very shocking.
Yes.
Did you think the same thing?
Yes. And people were playing in it and you're like, oh my goodness.
It's so cold.
Yes. So.
And where did you tour when you were in the choir?
I toured the East Coast. We went on the East Coast. We actually went to Florida and Miami.
Right, where I'm from. Right. Yes. I was telling you that before.
Uh-huh. And we traveled to North Carolina, so many states on the west, on the east. And then we also got a chance to go to England, Northern Ireland, Belfast, Wales, and so many other places. Yes.
And how did you become the choir's music director, Lynette?
Well, after high school, I traveled again with the choir.
because they started a program where they would bring back high school graduates to advocate for sponsorship for college for some of our children. So when we came back, we traveled while performing, and it gave me a different perspective of life. We all want to be doctors, engineers, but I felt that that is the one way that I could give back to the organization. So when I went back home, I did performing arts at college. And when I graduated, I knew there's only one place I wanted to work with. And I came, and they gave me to volunteer with the choir. And I haven't looked back since.
So you volunteer with the choir now?
Yes.
Okay. Ronnie, you were 9 years old?
Yes.
And do you know what you want to be when you grow up?
Or yes.
What do you want to do?
A businessman.
You want to be a businessman. That's a good idea. And Marklene is here with us as well. Marklene, are you 8 years old?
Yes, aunt.
And do you know what you want to be when you grow up?
Yes, aunt.
Oh, you do? What would you like to be?
A teacher.
You want to be a teacher. So I want to ask both of you, this is your only tour, right, to come, this is to be in the U.S. Ronnie, had you ever heard of Illinois before you came here?
No.
And what did you think it was going to be like? In your head, did you have an idea what you thought it was going to be like?
I thought that we are going to be when you want to do something, you just talk and these things, and they bring for you what you want.
So you thought, Marklene, what did you think about America? What did you think about the United States? Did you have a picture in your head of what you thought it would be like before?
No.
What's the funniest thing that you've seen so far?
We were going to another church, then I saw it was like something that can bounce, but when it has hair and it can move sideways.
Well, I wonder what it was that you saw.
You know the blow-up things that they use for adverts that
right. Is that who you saw in front of a store?
Yes.
Yeah, that is a weird thing. Ronnie, what about you? What's the funniest thing you've seen so far in the United States?
Puppies.
Puppies?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
Do you have puppies in Uganda?
Yes.
But why do you like American puppies more?
Because Ugandan's puppy, they just chase you.
Mm-hmm. Oh, they chase you.
Yes,
okay.
But for this, you can talk with them.
Oh, I see. Yes. You can hold them and you can pet them here.
Yeah.
American puppies.
I think it's because we don't have pets.
Right.
So this one.
Right. And then what about the food? What kind of food have you guys had here that you liked? Ronnie, what do you think?
Hamburgers.
Yeah. Do you like hamburgers?
Yes.
And pizza?
Yes.
Marklene, what about you?
Pizza.
Pizza, is that your favorite?
Yes.
And you know what you guys have to have when you're here is you have to have Chicago-style pizza. Someone needs to take you for that. Do you know what that is?
No.
It's really fat. It's like this big, so it's like 3 inches, and it has a lot of cheese inside.
Ooh.
And the crust is very thick. So I think someone needs to take you guys for Chicago-style pizza. It's the only pizza in the world is that they have here in Illinois is Chicago-style pizza. It's the only place you could get it.
Oh.
So you guys will have to try that. Oh, I could see Ronnie. Yeah. You sound excited about that. So, Ronnie, can you tell me what you like about being in the choir?
I like being in the choir because we sing well, and my best is singing. Singing is my best
activity.
Yes.
Singing is your best activity. Have you sang all your life?
No.
No? Just since you joined the choir?
Yes.
And you found out that you're good at it?
Yes.
Yeah? Marklene, what about you? What's your favorite thing about the choir?
The choir helps us who cannot manage to pay school fees for our children, and it educates us.
Yeah. Can we hear you sing another song for us?
Nasaya tuwelese obasa, 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 nasaya tuwelese obasa. My hope is built on nothing less than Jesus' blood.
righteousness. I dare not trust the sweetest frame, but wholly trust in Jesus' name.
Subiryange lili mugwe.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue this conversation with the African Children's Choir and hear more of their music. Stay tuned. You're listening to The 21st. Thanks for listening to The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. I'm joined in studio now by the African Children's Choir and the music director, Lynette Nabatanzi. Lynette, can you tell me about this next song you're going to sing?
Njuba no Mwezi is speaking about the creations of God, the sun and the moon, the oceans and the seas. All worship him. We tell him how holy he is, and it's really more of a praise song, lifting up our praise to God, because we can't compare ourselves to things that God created that cannot speak. We are greater than them. But if they give you praise, why can't we give him praise?
Let's hear that song.
That was Njuba no Mwezi, Munyenye ne Nyanja, Ensolo Zona, Nenyonyi, Bimwetendo.
And that is Ronnie. He's 9 years old. He's part of the African Children's Choir. They've been performing for us here. They're performing tonight at Trinity Lutheran Church in Urbana, and we've just been chatting with them. Ronnie, did you know all of these kids before you went on tour with them?
No.
You didn't know them? Oh, so what? And what have you? Have you guys had a fun time? Have you been playing games with them?
Yes.
What kind of games do you play?
Like Badu Badu.
What's that? Oh, you got to tell me what that game is.
If Uncle says Badu Badu, you do like this.
And he puts his hands up in the air and he waves them?
Yes.
And then what do you do?
But he'd be confusing you.
Let's do a test try.
Okay.
So Badu Badu, Badu, Ba. Badu Badu, Badu.
Oh, so you're just putting, you have to follow. It's sort
it's
of
a mind game.
So you know what? We have a game like that. You know what we call it? We call it Simon Says.
Uh-huh.
So that's the American version of that, is you have to do what the person in front says, and whoever doesn't do it, then they're out. Is that how you guys play?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Lynette, I wonder if you can tell me about some of the music that you chose that you are you're going to play for us. The first song that you sang was Amazing Grace. How many different songs did the children perform?
Well, we have about 5 English, I would say old classic, not classic.
Hymns?
Some of them are hymns. Some of them are contemporary music that has come up, like Cornerstone. Then we do songs like Whole World, that are world-celebrated classic songs that everyone nice sing-alongs for the people that they understand. They do traditional dances. We like to also keep the children in touch with their cultures. So we also always carry culture songs, dances, and they do a bit of drumming. But we have songs that are worship songs that are in our language or in that are celebrated, I must say, around Africa. They have a couple that they do. One might be from South Africa, from Nigeria. Songs that are celebrated sometimes around Africa.
And the songs that you are going to sing for us are in Luganda.
Yes, we have 2 in Luganda.
Can you tell me the name of the next song you'll perform for us?
Tendereza is about the blood of Jesus Christ and how we walk every day knowing that we are protected by something so much greater than we could ever know. So he talks about the blood of Christ, and the person singing it is like an individual song saying, I praise you for loving me, and I thank you for keeping me, for protecting me, for guiding me all this time in my life.
So let's hear that.
Tambulanga sitya oromusai ogwaika ha. Natukula da echigambo cho Yesu mwemuli amanyi agogega kuma
tendereza yesoro kunjagala lemwebaza oro kunkuma.
Was in Tendereza.
And that is Marklene. She's 8 years old and she's a member of the African Children's Choir. They are performing with us for us here on the 21st. So yes. You all are traveling all over. The concerts that you're doing, David, are the concerts all in Illinois, the ones that you're doing?
No.
Where are you going?
We'll be traveling to other states. I think after Illinois, we are going to Wisconsin. And then we'll also be going to other states. We'll also be going to Canada. But we have a 10-month tour, so we have like 9 more months.
Oh, so you're just beginning the tour.
Yeah, we're just beginning. While the kids on tour, we also teach them.
So you're teaching them. Okay,
yes,
because
we also tutor them.
So you have, when do you do those lessons?
We do it on Tuesdays and Thursday, and maybe Saturday. It depends. When they're traveling, then definitely they can't have school. But if we have like a day for rest, We do tutor them. And maybe we can do it like 4 days in a week or 3 days in a week.
What, in between traveling? So
yes.
You just started a 10-month tour.
Yes, we did.
Yes. Lynette, where do you all stay when you all are on tour, when you're going all over?
We are humbled to say that we are hosted by people who sometimes have never heard of the choir before, but we are hosted by different families from the churches or the venues that we go to, and they bring us into their homes and host us for a couple of nights or just a night.
Ronnie, what's it like to be in all of, is it fun to be in all these different houses, or do you think it gets tiring? Do you like it?
Yes.
You do? Marklean, what about you?
Yes.
And you know what? You guys, if you're going to be here for 10 months, you are going to see snow.
Yes.
Are you excited about
that?
You like that idea?
Yes.
All right. Well, we have the summer first. It's going to be pretty warm, but then it will get cold in a couple of months. Thank you guys for being with us. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Nyla.
Thank you, Nyla.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Okay.
Let's listen to one more song from the African Children's Choir.
Christ alone, cornerstone, weak made strong in the Savior's love. Through the storm, He is Lord, Lord of all. Nasaya tuelese obasa, Nasaya tuelese obasa, Nasaya tuelese obasa, Nasaya tuelese obasa, Nasaya tuelese obasa.
Thanks for listening to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. Some of the best antibiotic drugs come from bacteria themselves, and it turns out there may be undiscovered antibiotic components hiding within the DNA of bacteria. Using up-and-coming gene editing technologies, scientists are finding new ways to tap into these so-called silent genes with the hopes of discovering new drugs that can help meet our need for new antibiotics for treating bacterial infections. Joining me now to help understand all of this is Huimin Zhao. He is a professor of chemical and biomolecular engineering at the University of Illinois and one of the lead authors of a new study published in the journal Nature Chemical Biology on the use of this gene editing technology for drug discovery. Professor Zhao, welcome to the 21st. Thanks for being here with me.
Thank you.
So genome editing is a technique that's used to tinker with the DNA of an organism. Is that correct? How does that work?
That's correct. So genome engineering essentially is to replace or insert the genes into the chromosome of the organism. So we can change the basic blueprint of life.
And in that, can you do things then like turn on or turn off certain genes?
Yeah, we can also actually turn on and off gene expression as well, not just actually replace or insert genes.
And so when you say that, I mean, I guess would a correct analogy be it's like a genetically modified organism, what you're doing with these genes? Would that be a good analogy?
It is, because once we insert the promoter to activate those silent genes, the organism become a genetically modified organism.
So this might be a dumb question, but why are those genes silent? Why are they hidden?
Why they're hidden? Because the microorganisms live in a wild environment. When you actually cultivate those organisms in the laboratory, they don't encounter those environmental cues, right? So they are kind of silent in the laboratory. But when you move into the wild, then they will maybe activate once they see some environmental cues.
So how do you find the parts of the genes in the organism? How do you search for them?
Yeah, we basically sequence the genome of the organism, and then we use the bioinformatics tools to analyze those genes and try to predict those genes that are involved in the synthesis of those metabolites,
okay,
or interesting metabolites. And then we actually target those genes, try to activate them.
And why is it that the best antibiotic drugs tend to come from the bacteria themselves?
That's a very good question. As you know, penicillin actually was isolated from bacteria, I think, almost 100 years ago. And I think organisms produce those compounds probably for their host defense, right? They also defend because they live in a harsh condition. They have to defend the invasions by other organisms.
And so it makes sense that instead of us trying to find drugs that would defend against this just to go back to nature then? It sounds like what you're saying.
That's right. That's okay. Definitely has been a very effective approach. Many of the antibiotics we use nowadays actually were isolated from microorganisms.
And so the gene editing technology that your lab used in the study is called CRISPR-Cas9. Can you explain what that is?
Yeah, this is a new technology that was just developed a few years ago. It actually is used by organisms to protect themselves as well. So scientists developed this CRISPR-based genome editing tool to rapidly insert or delete genes in almost any organisms.
I think many of us have heard about how antibiotic resistance, how bacteria are able to evolve. Certainly, we've had a lot of conversations on this program. People who read a lot about this know about are worried about sort of these antibiotic resistant diseases that are or superbugs that are very
right.
We're concerned about. How would something like this help combat that problem? Would this help maybe provide a whole new class of antibiotics?
Exactly. That's exactly our motivation. Try to discover new classes of antibiotics that could be used to treat the antimicrobial resistance issue. The rise of multi-drug resistant pathogens is now widely recognized as one of the global challenges by World Health Organization, United Nations, and even White House. Currently, many companies actually kind of abandoned their antibiotics discovery program. So now really it's up to the small companies and the academic labs to discover new leads that could be turned into new antibiotics.
Why did drug companies abandon that? Why are universities like the research you're doing, why is it happening in universities instead of it or smaller companies?
Yeah, 20 years ago, all the major pharmaceutical companies had natural product discovery programs in which actually, discover the new antibiotics, right? But then they abandoned their programs in the past two decades, mainly because the limitation of the technology they use. They kept discovering the same antibiotics again and again, so they thought that now they couldn't discover any new ones, right? But also, another reason is that the antibiotics typically is sold at a very low cost, so the profit margin is very low compared
to... For antibiotics,
to,
right.
Exactly,
so it's not... For companies, it's not worth it for them to invest in research for
exactly.
antibiotics.
Exactly. I think two reasons. One is a scientific reason, other one is really is a kind of market, commercial reasons.
That said, as we think about this technology that you all are now using this gene editing technology, how far away do you think we are from that now developing actual new antibiotics for people to use?
Thanks to the advances in genomics, now we can sequence the microorganisms very quickly, and we found that actually there are many those silent gene clusters out there that could actually produce novel natural products. And I think with our new technologies, we basically try to scale up the process to activate as many those silent gene clusters as possible so that we can discover more compounds that could be turned into antibiotics.
And so that, in that sense, you've sped it up. The whole process has, you've made it faster, it sounds like.
Yeah, exactly. High throughput. Because we're not interested in just discovering one compound. We're interested in discovering thousands or even tens of thousands of those novel natural products. And then we will analyze their biological activities. And I'm sure some of them could be turned into new antibiotics.
That's Professor Weimin Zhao. He's a professor of chemical and biomolecular engineering at the University of Illinois, telling us about the new use of gene editing technologies, helping discover new antibiotics. We'll tweet out a link to the study as well as more information on it if you are interested in reading more. Professor Zhao, thank you so much for being with me.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. This week, The 21st celebrates 1 year of being live on the air every day. And we're going to take a few minutes every day this week to reflect back on the past year by checking in with each of our partner stations across the state. I'm joined now by Randy Eccles, general manager of our partner station. He's been with us from the very beginning, WUIS in Springfield, even before we were a daily program. Randy, welcome to The 21st. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, for sure. Hi, Nyla. It's so good to get to talk with you as opposed to just listen these days.
awesome.
Well, and it's nice to say the same thing about all of these conversations. It's kind of fun. Our audience doesn't get to talk to you all, the folks who run all of these stations. I get to talk to you guys on a daily basis, but it's kind of a great opportunity to introduce you to the audience. And I wanted to start by asking, why do you think it's important for the people in your listening area to, why was it important for you to take part in the 21st?
Well, what we needed in Springfield and Central Illinois was an ability to talk about all the issues, but from an Illinois perspective. We've got great public radio shows that are national shows, but giving Illinoisans a chance to express more what's going on, things are unique here. And we know that even more over the last, you know, year of the show, is that we've got this budget crisis and this government that doesn't seem to be able to function quite like it should anymore. And we cover that very closely here, but giving people a chance to call in and talk with you about it and talk with the experts you have on the air, that's been really important to us.
And as we said that, I wanted to play a portion of the show that aired towards the end of last year, highlighting a little bit of what you're talking about, bringing together the voices of people from Springfield, Champaign, other parts of the state to particularly address this issue of politics and the ongoing budget impasse. Let's take a listen to that.
How much is the state currently spending?
I don't understand who is gaining what from this particular dilemma.
How much revenue is the state currently taking in?
Who's going to bend so that we can move forward?
And what's the difference between saying we're spending X billion dollars and taking in Y billion dollars and saying we have a budget?
The people of Illinois are sick and tired of this. They want us to work together, not watch another pointless cycle of votes and vetoes. The people of Illinois want action. The time to act is now.
It's my impression that their attitude is to scale back and to move into the summer and to basically hold the taxpayers hostage for the remaining of this fiscal year.
Hostage taking is when you don't pass an entire budget at all for two straight years in exchange for some nebulous business-friendly reform.
But it is not possible for us to walk away from this chamber without having offered some security to the people of the state of Illinois that there will be a budget, that we can govern the state.
Governor Rauner wants to blame the Democrats, and Democrats want to be able to blame Rauner. I don't care who's to blame. We just are ready to see some results and to be reasonable and get a budget.
Those were voices from Illinois residents, Governor Bruce Rauner, Representative Jim Durkin, Senate President John Cullerton, Representative Barbara Flynn Curry, Pena Schools Superintendent David Lett. In 2016, that was a montage that aired on our end of the year show for Illinois politics as we celebrate our 1 year anniversary of the 21st. I'm here with Randy Eccles. He's the general manager of WUIS in Springfield. And we're talking about the importance of this. Randy, it's kind of sometimes I find it a little depressing to listen to all of those things and think that was a year ago and we're still in the same situation. But I guess that also underscores to me the next question I wanted to ask you, why you think it's important that we extend the conversation on politics beyond Springfield to the rest of the state.
Well, it's really important. We can get caught, much like they talk about beyond the Beltway in D.C., you can get caught in sort of a certain environment here where you don't know how it's impacting everybody else. And as a station, we've been reaching out more and more to find out, as this impasse continues, how it is impacting people. And it's got multitude of impacts, some of them long-term, some of them short. But when you're able to talk with these different sources, different guests, and also get people to call in and send in questions, it gives a much wider swath of the state a chance to say what's going on and how life is for them, which we might not get sitting just here in Springfield or in Urbana or wherever you might be listening.
You know, as we think about the 21st being a platform for people across the state to come together, I wonder if there's anything in particular you want listeners who are not from the Springfield area to know about the city and the surrounding community, about sort of the major issues that we're thinking about apart from state government, which I think tends to overshadow almost everything else that happens in Springfield.
Sure. Springfield is a regional medical center for most of central Illinois outside of St. Louis. And so a lot of people will come here for treatment. And there's some very good medical. It's taken over as the number one economic area over state government. And that's partially during the Blagojevich administration. They downsized state government, but it also shows the growth of the hospital sector. So we're a regional center like that. We also have quite a bit of arts and culture scene that goes on here. And we've got obviously all the Lincoln things, but Frank Lloyd Wright has the Dana Thomas House here. And those things are very nice parts of Springfield that, for me, growing up in Chicago and hearing the Chicago perspective of Springfield, I didn't know about. And Chicago, I think, sometimes feels that Springfield has way too much sway over its future. And because Chicago is a major economic center, at the same time now being in Springfield, I get the sense that, you know, Springfield isn't just the patch or a place that, you know, doesn't understand what Chicago's about. They very much want to take what Chicago is interested in into account, but there's a rest of the state. A third of the population lives outside the Chicago metropolitan area. And I think the 21st and what we try to do in Springfield tries to express that perspective frequently.
As we look forward to next year, Randy, and I wonder as you think about, you know, we started this conversation talking about the political climate, not just here in Illinois, but across the country. I wonder what issues to you as the general manager of WUIS are sort of foremost in your mind for this coming year.
The state budget impasse is the biggest for us here because not only is it impacting everybody across the state, but there are a lot of state workers here, and so it's affecting the local economy. So that would be number one for us. I think at the federal level, we've seen some changes that are going to impact different rules and laws and maybe how much funding Illinois gets. So those are important. Outside of those sort of government-based ones, I think quality of life is always huge. And I think what we're also seeing right now is quite a bit of disruption in education and higher education, and that comes back to funding. So it's hard to be in Springfield without things having a political attachment, but those seem to be the ones that we're paying the most attention to right now.
Randy Eccles is the general manager of WUIS in Springfield, the original partner of the 21st from the beginning. Thanks, Randy. I appreciate
it. Happy anniversary. Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
All week we have been having our anniversary conversations. Thanks to Randy for that. I want to introduce one final member of the 21st team, certainly last but not least, another one of our engineers, Jason Croft. You, for folks at WILL, you also hear his voice. He does double duty because he goes right off the air from engineering the 21st to hosting Here and Now. Hey,
yes.
Jason.
Well, it's good to be with you, Nyla, on this side of the microphone, on this side of the glass.
And normally you're on the other side of the glass where you technically direct the show.
Right,
and
right.
It really is direction. Can you explain what that means for people who don't understand?
Well, I'm back there making sure all the elements and all the mics are on and all the phones are, you know, all the phone calls and all the production elements are played and everything hits the right times and that it all sounds good. I kind of compare it to juggling, right? But you're juggling knives and cats on a moving train.
Yeah. Well, that's a very good analogy, I think, because you're juggling different studios sometimes, different locations, different guests, whether they're in studio with me or somewhere else or on the phone or on another studio somewhere. Those are all like five different ways that people connect to the show that
right.
we bring them on. Whether they're live or they're tape. We're going sometimes between a live segment and a tape segment. People don't ever realize that on the air either.
Right. Well, we try to make sure everything sounds seamless and that it sounds great. And you know, I think it's been really kind of a nice adventure to do this really fast-paced daily show with all of these moving parts and elements and just do it day after day after day. And there's such a thrill with doing live radio. And it's always a thrill at the end when you've done it and it sounds great.
Which, and that's our goal for everybody listening is that it sounds great every day. Your goal when you're in there is to manage the chaos so I can just kind of talk. But you and I do have a lot of communication now where we're just sort of looking at each other through the glass when things happen.
Yep.
Hopefully not bad things, although that does happen because it's live radio. It is a rush. And this is really different because you've worked in show production for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
This is the first time you've done a show like the 21st.
Definitely a show with this, again, this many moving parts and, you know, this much attention to detail. And of course, we do it here in Urbana and send it out to other stations as well so that when you're doing a show like this, you have to be very conscious of the breaks that are built into it and making sure that all those time posts are hit and that everything comes together exactly when it should.
Exactly to the second, right, is normally when we're discussing things. Now, as we talk about this, I wonder, you also do all of the great sound engineering for a lot of our musical mm-hmm. elements, which we don't normally do live because that is a complicated process.
It is a little tricky. But I do love when we bring performers in here and we get them in the performance studio and we get a chance to kind of flex the muscles of this program and have a little bit more fun and do something that is...
Like we did with the African Children's Choir.
Like we did. And that was really interesting. And actually, that was a lot of fun, too, to get them all in here into our little studio and get the sound from them. And we've done this quite a bit over the course of the year, and it's really always been a lot of fun. And the one I'm thinking of in particular is a while back we had the Jupiter String Quartet in and did a live performance for us. And that was just absolutely amazing for both the sound that came from this quartet, but just watching them perform. I mean, that was an amazing thing because they just projected so much energy in this room, and we were the only audience they had.
That was incredible. And it was remarkable also to watch the way, as a quartet, they work together and they communicate with each other while they're playing, even yep. though they're not, there's no verbal communication, but there's an entire conversation that's going on with a quartet when they're making music.
Seems
together.
Awfully familiar, doesn't it?
Yeah, it is. What a wonderful analogy to how we do the show every day. Yes, I wasn't even intending that, but it is a wonderful thing. It's great to hear their music, to know there is a lot of work that goes into producing that. And that's actually one of the things I love about the show, that we do serious conversations about news and politics. But especially on Fridays, I love that on Fridays we try to have a musical element. And I'm really thankful that you are able to do all of that, because it is a really complicated, it's an art form in itself, mm-hmm. engineering sound like that. To replicate the sound that we're hearing live in studio.
Absolutely.
So while we're at it, why don't we take a listen to a little bit of the Jupiter String Quartet now? Was the Jupiter String Quartet live in studio, one of the many musical groups that we've had on the 21st, engineered by Jason Croft, who's here with me, who is a member of the 21st team.
One of the silent members in the background.
Silent members in the background. There's a big group. That's yep. why I really enjoy doing these conversations this week, because everyone just hears my voice, but there's so many more people that go into a live production. And I
Absolutely.
Want everybody who's listening to know that, too, that there's a whole group. There's a whole group of people behind us making this happen every day.
Yes. Oh, now I have to ask you a question.
You can if you want.
Is that how we're going? So if there was one deep, dark, dirty secret about the behind the scenes of the show that our listeners would like to know, what would that be?
Oh, that's interesting. I guess it would be how much, I guess this is sort of like the sausage making, right? I think
right.
it is the moments where you and I are probably panicking because we've lost a guest, or some of phone lines dropped, or a guest is lost and is not here. And I'm just sounding very calm and you're looking at me. I guess maybe that's the part. People don't, I guess for me, what I like is that when we have those moments, people never really know them.
Hopefully not. No.
Hopefully not. And when it gets bad enough that I feel like I have to explain it to you, I'm like, well, this is what's happening. Because yeah. I also feel like we have to be transparent about things as well. So I guess that's a dirty secret, is that sometimes there probably are moments where I'm
oh, yeah.
kind of panicking. You
that
and I are both
fall.
Completely panicking because we have nothing. But, you know, that happens.
It does happen. Like that free fall moment when you welcome a guest and it's one, two, hello, Nyla. You know, that
exactly.
one or 2 seconds, that's complete. Just you're jumping without a parachute there.
Jumping without a parachute. But I have a great team behind all of the 21st every day that is helping us. That's Jason Croft, Steve Mork, Alan Montesilio, Christine Herman, Scott Cameron, Abrar Alhiti, Joe Yoon, and Nick Vance from the University of Illinois Social Media Analytics Lab. And I also want to thank, as always, the band Public Access for our theme music. I'm Nyla Boodoo. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend.